Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
the Elm Street Group at Morgan Stanley, working with clients to create enduring financial value and a lasting impact through sustainable investing solutions. A local wealth management team with global insights. Find out more at the Elm Street Group at morganstanley.com.
Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community. With convenient locations throughout northern New England, world-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here. And from
New Hampshire Center for Cognitive and Behavioral Therapies, providing outpatient, evidence-based, specialty behavioral health and substance use disorder services. NHCCBT.com.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Tuesday was a big day for ballot battles in New Hampshire, with an early morning court ruling on the legality of new state voter requirements, and then later the specter of voter fraud raised at President Trump's Elections Integrity Commission at its all-day meeting in Manchester. At the heart of these two different events is one theme: how good are American elections? Is the process open enough to make sure all those eligible can vote? Or is it too open, making it easy for cheating to occur? The answers reveal competing worldviews, and those have been on display a lot lately, especially since last fall, given unsubstantiated claims of widespread voter fraud. Today in The Exchange, we dive back into the ballot box, and let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. We have two guests in studio for the hour. Casey McDermott is here, NHPR reporter covering politics and policy. Casey has reported extensively on voting laws and the debate here in New Hampshire. And Casey, thank you so much. I really appreciate
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Dante Scala, associate professor of political science at UNH and a fellow at the Carsey School of Public Policy, a longtime observer of New Hampshire politics. Dante, thank you also for being here.
You're welcome, Laura.
I also want to let the audience know that we did plan to have someone from the Secretary of State's office on our show, but they withdrew late yesterday, citing ongoing election-related litigation. So, Dante, to you first, what is the average voter, person who just wants to show up, cast a ballot, go home, what are they supposed to make of all this debate we've seen recently over what's an appropriate check and what isn't?
You know, I think they're probably thinking something's up, but we're not quite sure what. You know, they're in a situation where the president of the United States makes very grandiose, wild claims about voter fraud. So they think something must be up. If there's smoke, there's fire, but they're not quite sure what. And for most voters, the whole process of voting itself is rather arcane, and they just see the end product, but not the machinery that backs it all up. So all that is behind a curtain of sorts.
So they think something might be up. There seems to be a lot of smoke, but they're not really sure if there's a fire.
Right. I mean, you know, for example, when the vice chair of Donald Trump's Election Integrity Commission writes an article for Breitbart and says the U.S. Senate election was, there's proof that it was swayed by voters voting illegally in New Hampshire, they take note of that, and it becomes the story in New Hampshire for the several days leading up to the meeting of the commission. So they see that, and they, you know, they may disagree, and certainly their partisanship enters into it. I'm sure Democrats were a lot less likely to believe it than Republicans, for example. But there are a lot of allegations circulating around, and that can have, I think, an effect on the ordinary voter thinking, you know, something's up with our process, something needs to be done. Though they're not quite sure what that would be.
Well, and Casey, you have been covering this, as I said, extensively. What are the two competing narratives that you hear when you go out and report on this issue?
And this is going to be an oversimplification, but I think on one side, you have people who say, look, New Hampshire has same-day voter registration. It does ask people to provide certain levels of verification, but To some people, they say that system is still just too open to being taken advantage of by people who have, you know, want to maybe cast two votes in two different states or just come here and participate in New Hampshire's elections because it's a swing state, because it's so high profile politically. We have right now very little to no evidence to indicate that voter fraud is a widespread problem in New Hampshire. And I want to make sure that that's clear. On the other hand, you have people who say, you know, look, all of these people who are talking about voter fraud are talking about conspiracy theories, basically. They're talking about buses coming across the Massachusetts border. Again, something we have no evidence of. And that all of this talk of wanting to cut down on voter fraud is actually just a cover for people who want to enact stricter voter laws to suppress certain groups of people, young people, low-income people, people who may not vote with the people who want to enact these laws.
So that's the narrative from the other side. And then there are those, Casey, who, including the governor, who say, look, there's very little evidence of actual fraud, but we do need to tighten up the process both at the registration point and at the ballot box.
Right, exactly. And that is kind of where we arrived at Senate Bill 3. So the still very controversial bill that was passed earlier this year elicited a lot of debate over several months and is still tied up in litigation after it went into effect last week. So basically what that bill sought to do, and this is a watered-down version of the one that was originally introduced at the beginning of the session, but the bill does a few things. First, it gets rid of the domicile affidavit. So that's something where if you were a same-day registrant showing up to vote on election day and you didn't have any of the kind of documentation that the state wanted you to have to show that you live where you're trying to vote, you could sign a piece of paper saying, I attest under penalty of perjury that I live here. So that form no longer exists for same-day registrants under SB 3. And now what the state says is it wants you to come back with the documents if you don't have them on election day, and provide those either within 10 or 30 days, depending on when your local clerk's office is open. And if you don't do that, then you could face, you know, a $5,000 penalty, criminal charges for voter fraud, civil charges, things like that. So that piece of it with the potential penalty that might be associated for not returning with the right kind of documents is what concerned a lot of people who were concerned about restricting the right to vote, because they said people might look at that and say, you know what, it's just not worth the hassle, not worth the intimidation. I don't want to face all of this, you know, potential fines, and that would lead to a suppression of the vote because of that.
So this was the judge, Casey, who released a ruling early Tuesday morning in time for a special House seat election. He says the law can go forward, but not the penalties, because he called those a deterrent.
Yeah, and actually the judge, so this is, we're still at the beginning of this lawsuit here. So this was what was at stake earlier this week was whether or not the law was going to be basically kind of struck down or cast aside while a judge was deciding whether or not it was legal. So there's still questions about whether the law overall will be deemed constitutional, unconstitutional under New Hampshire law. But for now, what happened was we had a special election in Laconia on Tuesday. And for the purposes of that election and the ones while this lawsuit is still ongoing, the state will not be able to enforce the penalties because the judge said that those he had concerns about being too severe.
And we talked to Governor Chris Sununu on the Exchange on Tuesday morning, shortly after this ruling came down. And we asked him about what the judge had said, that the law can take effect without penalties, because the judge, again, called them a, quote, very serious deterrent. Let's hear what Governor Sununu had to say.
I disagree with that opinion. But like we said, this is, you know, they've taken it to the courts. They want to fight it. But it's, again, just the first step. There'll be other legal steps throughout this process. Like could be the trial and an appeal and, you know, who knows where it goes from there. Again, the state will abide by whatever the courts ultimately decide as this goes forward. But we're very pleased with the results that we got today.
And again, both sides kind of declared victory in this because the judge agreed with one side and the other side. Go ahead, Dante.
I guess two things. One, you know, as Casey mentioned, this is the beginning of the lawsuit, not the end of the lawsuit. And the judge made clear that the right to vote is considered fundamental. And therefore, accordingly, the SB 3 is going to be held up to a stricter level of scrutiny than we might see normally. So it was definitely the judge was offering a to be continued on this. And then secondly, you know, just thinking the long view on SB 3, it's a quintessential move by the New Hampshire state legislature, which is namely to put burdens on localities, because there were other answers to the problems raised by people advocating for SB 3, one of it which would be to go back to, say, the motor voter law that was passed in the 1990s, which New Hampshire refused to accept, one of seven states to do so, where people could actually register, say, through the DMV and other sites. And New Hampshire refused because they said, we don't want the federal government interfering with our elections or telling us what to do. So instead, what we've done with SB 3 is, you know, local elections officials who are already spread thin, who are already overburdened, are being asked to do this as well in order to solve this alleged problem.
Well, maybe we'll hear from some local elections officials this hour in the exchange. You can join us 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Once again today in the exchange, we are looking at voter rules here in New Hampshire and more broadly these two competing worldviews that we've heard a lot about lately. Whether American elections are open enough to make sure everybody gets a chance to vote, or whether our process is too open, making it easier for cheating to occur. Let's hear from you, 1-800-892-6477. And Dante and Casey, a little bit later, I want to talk more about the President's Elections Integrity Commission. Came to New Hampshire this week. It was a big, big deal. But since we're talking about this new voter law, SB 3, I want to invite into our conversation another voice, Lauren Chuligin. She's NHPR's State of Democracy reporter who went to Laconia on Election Day for that first day of voting under SB 3. And Lauren, a small affair with a huge spotlight because of this law. How did this debate over SB 3 seem to be on voters' minds at the polls on Tuesday?
Yeah, so it's funny because I think for most people I talked to, they had to be reminded what Senate Bill 3 was and what the debate was. But then when I brought up voter fraud in general, people had extremely heated opinions on both sides about their concerns about voter fraud, or for a lot of people, the fact that they think it's not a problem at all. And just as Casey was saying, there are no, you know, substantiated claims that have been made that voter fraud is a problem in New Hampshire. And so I heard from people who, you know, say that they were kept up at night at the idea that college students who, say, live in Massachusetts or are born there could come in and throw an election one way or the other, but then move out of the state once they've graduated. That was a big concern that I heard from multiple voters. And then on the flip side, you know, I heard from people in Belmont who said, I have no problem with this whatsoever. Voter fraud doesn't exist. And if people have concerns, you know, come down to the town hall when ballots are being counted and you can watch them, you know, be counted one by one. So it was very interesting to hear that this is something that people are talking about.
So who else was at the polls, Lauren, besides the people you'd expect, local voters and local elections officials?
Yeah, so Casey had mentioned this ruling. I mean, it came down right at 7 a.m.,
right
when the polls were opening. So the Attorney General's office actually sent out staff to all six wards in Laconia and then also at the town hall in Belmont. So there was someone there to answer questions, to talk to election officials, or the clerk, for example, in Belmont had told me that someone basically greeted her at the door when she opened the door and said, this is what the ruling says. This is the paperwork you need to use. And then, you know, they just stick around. And I saw, you know, one of the officials from the Attorney General's office had their smartphone open with the ruling right on it. So if anyone had questions, they were there. It was an interesting thing for such a small election.
Well, that's a thing. I mean, these house elections are tiny.
Right.
So were there any of these groups, Lauren, that sometimes show up at bigger elections, you know, groups on both sides of this issue, concerned about voter fraud or concerned about voter access? Were any of these groups present to monitor how the process went in Laconia?
Not that I saw. And I was only out for the morning rush, you know, when people were coming out. But I will say that what was interesting about it is, you know, of course, this was the first test for SB 3, but this wasn't an election where you would probably see a huge influx of same day registrations. And also, it's not a town like Durham or Hanover where there is a big university
right
there where they would bring in a lot of those voters. And one of the clerks, the clerk in Belmont, had mentioned that to me, that they actually were glad that this was the first test run because it would be a little bit easier than a big national election or general election.
Anything else, Lauren? Any last impressions from covering this very small vote, again, with a big spotlight on it?
Yeah, honestly, I was just very fascinated that voter fraud is something that keeps some people I talked to in the Lakes region up at night, that it is a huge concern for them. Some of them would say, well, you know, I saw this video on the internet or my friend told me, and they're really holding those opinions so strongly, even though, as we were mentioning, there are no substantiated claims. And so I think the big takeaway for me, and I'm sure what we'll be talking about for weeks to come, is that this is something that people are really worried about.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Lauren, for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Lauren Chulgin, again, NHPR State of Democracy reporter, who covered that election in the town of Laconia, the first day of voting under SB 3 when the judge had just literally handed down his ruling before the polls opened. You can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. So Dante and Casey, Dante, you first. We need to hit this right on the head. Lauren raised it. College students, this seems to be where really people have serious debate, concerns. Dante, the idea that, look, they don't really live here, so why should they get to vote here?
Right. And SB 3 overall, I mean, doesn't seem to be a big shift in that regard, because it makes pretty clear in SB 3 that if you have residency at, say, at UNH or St. Anselm or Keene State, that is proof of that. That's the sort of proof that you need in order to vote. So for all the talk about college students, SB 3 is not going to dramatically change the requirements that college students are still going to be able to vote. You know, people who grew up in Massachusetts and go to UNH are still eligible to vote in New Hampshire. So in that sense, SB 3 has not changed all that much. I think the burden might fall more on people who are, as Casey mentioned, kind of poorer, transient, who are moving a lot. They might be more intimidated about voting than college students. Although I would add, I think colleges and universities around New Hampshire, because of all the furor about SB 3, are going to need to educate their undergraduates, especially about what their rights are with voting. And college students, admittedly, you know, if you look in places like Keene and Hanover and Durham, those are clearly strong sources of Democratic support. So college students, you know, typically in New Hampshire, they don't all vote this way, but they tend toward the Democratic Party. And in a close election, can those college towns swing a close election like the 2016 U.S. Senate race? Yeah, they can do that.
So that was part of what co-chair Kobach, right, Casey, was relying on to make his claim that the U.S. Senate race here in New Hampshire might have been swayed by, quote unquote, illegal voters, drawing on the idea that people voted with out-of-state licenses. I know you've talked a lot about this, Casey, but can you please just clarify once again?
Sure. So just to unpack what he was getting at. So he was referring to statistics that actually have been out there for several months now. We reported on them earlier this year. Regarding the use of out-of-state IDs to register on election day. So New Hampshire law, we do have a voter ID law, and one of the acceptable forms of voter ID under that law is an out-of-state driver's license to say, basically, I am who I say I am when I'm registering to vote. And according to statistics re-released, actually, last week by the Secretary of State's office in response to a request from legislative leaders who said that they wanted to look into potential, you know, issues or areas that would be in need of kind of more changes legislatively, there were statistics released that said that about 6,500 people registered using out-of-state IDs last year, and most of those people had not yet obtained an in-state ID. And I can pick up on the explanation when we get back.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. And we'll also hear Secretary of State's Bill Gardner's response to that critique from the co-chair of the commission. And we'll also talk to the head of the House Election Law Committee, a big supporter of SB 3. And we'll hear from you. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be right back.
This week, NHPR's Something Wild explores the intertidal zone, that place between high and low tides.
And this is a difficult place to live. Twice a day, you are pounded by waves and then exposed to sun and wind.
Doesn't sound so bad on a warm September afternoon, but imagine that constant barrage in November. Chris and Dave give us the lowdown on the creatures and veg that call this place home. Subscribe to Something Wild wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, the Granite State has been at the center of the debate over voting laws this week, with a key court ruling on a new voting law earlier in the week on Tuesday morning, and then the President's Elections Integrity Commission meeting in Manchester all day. We're finding out all that's been going on with this topic of voting rules and voting rights, and we'd love to hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Casey McDermott is here, NHPR reporter covering politics and policy, who has reported extensively on voting laws, along with Dante Scala, associate professor of political science at UNH, a longtime observer of Granite State politics. I want to let everybody know that we did have a plan to have somebody from the Secretary of State's office on our program, but they withdrew late yesterday, citing the ongoing election-related litigation. So, Casey, just before the break, you were talking about this claim that was put out there by the co-chair of this Presidential Elections Integrity Commission, suggesting that New Hampshire's U.S. Senate race had been swayed by, quote-unquote, illegal voters, and you were starting to explain those numbers to us. Go ahead.
Right. So basically, Kansas Secretary of State Chris Kobach penned a Breitbart column pointing to this data about the fact that 6,000 people had registered using out-of-state IDs, and most of those people, as of the end of August, had not yet followed through on obtaining a New Hampshire driver's license. He pointed to that as an indication that, quote, a pivotal close election was likely changed through voter fraud. And that close election that he was referring to was the election between now Senator Maggie Hassan and former Senator Kelly Ayotte. That race was a very narrow election. It was decided by only about 1,000 votes. What Kobach didn't acknowledge in his column is, A, that out-of-state IDs are a valid form of voter identification at the polls, and B, that where those out-of-state IDs were used. And we had done some reporting on this earlier this year that pointed out that the people, the places that see the highest rates of out-of-state IDs in use registering on the day of the election at the polls are college towns. So basically, we can't draw a straight line between, you know, every individual voter and or even how they voted. We don't know whether these people voted Republican or Democrat. We don't know, you know, who they are exactly based on the data that's available. But what we can say is that a lot of the people who are using out-of-state IDs to register at the polls are doing so around college campuses, and that out-of-state college students are allowed to vote in New Hampshire if they meet other eligibility requirements.
Because as you told us earlier, Dante, you maybe use that main ID or that Massachusetts driver's license to say, yeah, I'm Dante Scala, but you do have to show proof of domicile or residency by saying, I'm Dante Scala and I live at such and such residence hall at UNH.
Right.
So that's how it works. Okay. Got an email from Gene in Londonderry on this. He says, my sister-in-law's mother moved up from Florida last summer. She registered to vote at the polls last fall with her Florida driver's license. She no longer drives, so she does not want to pay to get a New Hampshire driver's license. She does not have a car to register here. She does not have a lease or utility bill in her name. Under SB 3, how would someone like her register in the future? So, Dante, this isn't just about college students. It's also about snowbirds and older folks who sometimes maintain two residences.
Yeah, and Casey, correct me here on the details, but my understanding is that if you're not, under New Hampshire law, if you're not planning to drive, then there's no need to, you know, exchange your out-of-state license for a license here in New Hampshire if you're not planning to drive. I mean, if it would be a different case if the mother-in-law were driving here with the out-of-state license for an extended period of time. But if you're not going to drive at all, then it's a different story.
Since we talked about this controversy raised by Kris Kobach, sort of a lot of people in New Hampshire were upset about this, including Secretary of State Bill Gardner, that Mr. Kobach had sort of impugned the integrity of our elections. Let's hear Secretary of State Bill Gardner addressing Kobach directly during the commission meeting about this Breitbart piece that you mentioned, Casey. Let's hear what Secretary Gardner had to say.
The problem that has occurred because of what you wrote is that the question of whether our election, as we have recorded it, is real and valid. And it is real and valid.
Again, that's New Hampshire Secretary of State Bill Gardner talking to Kris Kobach at the Elections Integrity Commission meeting in Manchester this week. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org. With us on the phone now is someone who has been watching this issue quite closely. We're talking with Representative Barbara Griffin. She's a Republican from Goffstown and chair of the House Election Law Committee. And Representative Griffin, it's really nice to have you. Thank you for being here.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Well, it was a long day at St. Anselm College. You were there as head of the Election Law Committee when the President's Commission on Election Integrity met. Many, many hours of testimony. I listened to some of it, and it did go on for quite a long time. What's the one big takeaway for you, Representative Griffin, from this big day?
I think that walking away from that commission meeting, you realize that elections can be quite technical. The first presentation went into a lot of data that was presented by a number of esteemed panelists. And I think the other thing you could walk away with is that when it comes to the average person, they want to know how things work. And I say that both because I heard you talk about sort of the question about what goes on behind the curtains in the vote, but the fact that part of the presentation was voting machines that are over 100 years old that are still in use, and there were still people crowded around those machines 40 minutes after the commission left, taking pictures and looking at how it was done.
Yeah, and I think NHPR had some pictures on its website, and they are pretty ancient looking. So the takeaway for you then, Representative Griffin, is it's complicated and there's a lot of detail.
There is. And the other thing that was presented that I thought was interesting, that it would appear that there is increased confidence in elections when people believe they are being administered legally and fairly. There were a couple of examples presented of voter participation rates and their confidence in the outcome when certain requirements were initiated, and citations to some questions where, while one might have argued voting got harder, participation rates went up. And there are certainly in our own country situations where voting gets easier and participation goes down. So what the other big takeaway is I think that people want to participate, but they want to participate in a process that they perceive as working properly.
I want to ask you, Representative Griffin, if I could please, about this whole controversy that blew up a couple days before the commission came to town, and we were just discussing it. The co-chair of the commission, Kris Kobach, suggesting that New Hampshire's U.S. Senate election was likely swayed by illegal voting because lots of people in New Hampshire voted without out-of-state driver's licenses, 6,000 people. Secretary of State Gardner pushed back on that. We just played that little clip from him pushing back. How do you view it, Representative Griffin?
Well, I think in the first instinct, my natural reaction is to be sort of a haughty New Englander and say, what is this Midwesterner coming out and talking about how we do things here? But once I get past that, I think that there's a distinction that sometimes is lost in the discussion about the question of is there fraud or is there substantial fraud? And your own esteemed panelists this morning have sort of used the terms interchangeably, because there is no question that there's fraud in elections. The question is, was there fraud in our elections? And if there was, a nature and amount that affected close races, for example, the Senate race that you earlier referenced. And I think the issue with the commission is a broader one as to how are we running our elections? Because indeed, there are three requirements to vote. You have to be a citizen, you have to be the correct age, and you were supposed to be voting in the place you are designated to be voting in, a representative republic.
Oh, and Representative Griffin, I do apologize. Your phone line is clicking out there. So I'm going to just ask you one last question specifically, please, about SB 3. We talked a lot about this earlier. This has new requirements to prove that you are, quote unquote, domiciled in New Hampshire. Here's an email I got this morning from Charlie in Derry, Representative Griffin, who says, please ask your guests to clarify if SB 3 requires of new 30-day registrants that they must say they intend to stay in New Hampshire. Is the wording indefinitely or forever, Charlie asks, or what? Most people these days, especially young people, cannot say where they will be living in the near future, no less the long term. Is this an issue in any of the lawsuits challenging SB 3? Charlie, thank you for the email. What do you think, Representative Griffin? This was an issue when the case came before the judge earlier this week.
Well, actually, if you read the order that the judge issued, that I don't believe that was something that the judge specifically addressed. And I think that as to the specifics of the law, the judge was pretty clear saying that he thought he might have been optimistic in regards to what he was going to be able to address in a 3-hour hearing. Those requirements do not change with Senate Bill 3. Domicile was the law before Senate Bill 3, and domicile is the law.
I think what our emailer is getting at is that there's a perception, and the judge did sort of talk about this, that the requirements and the penalties might make it too scary for people to register. They might be afraid that they have to pay these large penalties and get in big trouble. And so they just say, I'm not going to bother.
Well, the penalty provision of the order is sort of interesting to me. And I think it goes to the fact that election law is quite technical. The penalty provision that would apply to Senate Bill 3 or any voting fraud has actually been in place since 1979. And the last change to that law was made in 2012. Currently, if you commit voter fraud, such as voting more than once for any office or applying for a ballot impermissibly, you are subject to those fines. So the fines that were referred to in the context of Senate Bill 3 are currently existing fines for election fraud. And it should be noted that that section specifically gives the Attorney General's office the authority to issue civil penalties in regards to voter fraud. And in fact, in the most recent election, the finding of voter fraud that was made that I am aware of or thinking of right now resulted in a monetary penalty.
I wonder if you could just give us a big feeling about where you think this SB 3 is going to go in the future, Representative Griffin. I know there's a lawsuit and there's a lot of uncertainty out there, but given what the judge said, given the whole interest in this topic, I wonder where you think this is going to go.
I think a lot of things about Senate Bill 3. And,
yeah.
And frankly, my husband would tell me that I think a little too much about Senate Bill 3. So, I wouldn't be able to say where I thought it would go, but I think wherever it goes, I am hoping that in the legislature we are able to maintain laws and enact laws so that people, when they appear at the polls, understand that everyone voting with them is indeed legally entitled to be voting.
You know, one of our guests, Dante Scala, said earlier that city and town elections officials aren't certain how this is going to affect them. Is this going to create more work, more hassle? Is their integrity being questioned? What about the sort of volunteers who show up on election day? What can you say, Representative Griffin, to make these, you know, sort of dedicated local elections officials and volunteers feel okay about this law, that it's not going to create too much of a hassle for them?
You know, I'm glad you mentioned them because they really are the backbone of our election system. They are the dedicated local citizens who come out on election day. I've had the opportunity to work at polls. I've been an assistant moderator, and they do a terrific job. And I think that when there's any change, whether it's in the office that you're sitting at or sitting at the poll table, when there's a change, it's something different and it's hard to learn, and you want to make sure you can do your job competently and not be pressed for time. We heard the same issues when the voter ID law was established in regards to the amount of work, and I'm sure we've heard it, voter suppression. And the reality is that we just didn't see that pan out. So I'm confident that the Secretary of State's office will be able to work with officials. It sounds like it went all right in the jurisdiction that was having elections on Tuesday, Laconia. And I'm sure with the training that goes on that, again, I've had the opportunity to be at, that our officials are going to be more than able to deal with any changes that might be made.
Okay, Representative Griffin, thank you very much. We'll talk to you again about this. We really appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you.
That's Representative Barbara Griffin, again, a Republican from Goffstown, chair of the House Election Law Committee. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Dante and Casey, let's go right to our listeners. Fran is in Holderness. Hi, Fran. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning. My issue is with people claiming that there are busloads of students crossing the border to vote in New Hampshire. My point being that not a single person has come up with the evidence that they need to prove this claim. For example, calling all the bus companies in the border areas to see if any of them were hired to do that, and specifically who they picked up and where they left them off. Because they haven't ever produced any evidence, it would seem that they're making it up. And unfortunately, people have picked up on this and are parroting it in many locations. And I'm sorry to see that this kind of falsehood could be made in the state when it's actually completely made up.
So, Fran, you're involved in local elections yourself? Is that what you told us?
I was a supervisor for 15 years, and I'm now off the supervisors formally, but I usually assist at elections.
And have you noticed any changes in recent years, given voter ID laws and, you know, a slight increase in requirements here in New Hampshire? We haven't seen a big increase yet because SB3 is new, but have you seen any changes?
Actually, a funny thing is that usually the people who forget their IDs are the people we know, and they go out to their car and get it. But the students are all, we have students from Plymouth who live in Holderness, they are attending the state college, and they all come not only with a proper ID, but they come with a receipt or some proof of residency. They did this before this new law. And so we have absolutely no trouble registering them. I would throw this in also. A person should never be turned away from the polls unless there is some outstanding reason, because if you turn them away, they will never come back.
Well, Fran, since you mentioned, I'm glad you called, given your 15-year work on elections in Holderness. Since you mentioned the students, real quick, I mean, some people would say, look, you know, if you go to Plymouth State and you live in Holderness, but you're from Vermont, you know, vote absentee in Vermont. Don't muck around with Holderness's local elections.
I've given a lot of thought to that. And having had a son who actually attended UVM, I think that their interest becomes where they live. And so to suggest that a student coming to Plymouth from Alabama, let's say, is going to continue to be interested in the politics, the local politics of the community in which he was raised, is probably unlikely. I think that they become, if they're political at all, I think that you would find that they become quite interested in the politics of their present residence, which in this state would be at one of the universities or colleges within the state of New Hampshire.
Okay, well, Fran, thank you for calling in. We appreciate it. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange at nhpr.org. Coming up, we'll talk to a key opponent of laws like SB3. He's been working at the State House against some of these voter requirement bills. We'll hear from him and hear from you, so stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at voting laws, voting rules. The Granite State has been at the center of this national debate over voting laws this week. There was a key court ruling on new voting requirements earlier in the week, in the early morning hours before an election took place. And then later that day, the President's Elections Integrity Commission came to town, holding a meeting, an all-day meeting in Manchester. We're looking at all that's been going on with this topic. We'd love to hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Helping us out this morning, Dante Scala, Associate Professor of Political Science at UNH, Casey McDermott, NHPR reporter who has reported extensively on our voting laws. I did want to let everybody know we had planned to have someone from the Secretary of State's office on our program. That was the plan, but then they withdrew late yesterday, citing ongoing election-related litigation. And we've been talking about that ongoing lawsuit concerning SB 3, New Hampshire's new voter requirements law. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange at nhpr.org. And here's one that just came in from Christopher, who says, Secretary of State Gardner has said he doesn't believe there is widespread voter fraud in New Hampshire, but he believes there is a perception, capitalized, that there is fraud. Therefore, he's cooperating with the commission. Christopher asks, and Dante, I'll throw this to you, why are some folks so worked up by his attempt at transparency to resolve this conflict? And Christopher, thank you for the comment.
Yeah, it's a good question. And it gets kind of to the heart of Secretary of State Bill Gardner's dilemma. If you heard Secretary of State Gardner a few minutes ago, that's about as emotional as you'll ever hear Bill Gardner speak in public, defending the integrity of the New Hampshire election. But he does so in a very calm, deliberate, careful sort of way. And that reflects his role as a New Hampshire Secretary of State who's in charge of the administration of elections, that he is supposed to be nonpartisan. And he's elected by the state legislature. He's not popularly elected. So even though Bill Gardner and Kris Kobach, the Secretary of State of Kansas, are both Secretaries of State, they're two very different creatures, so to speak, because Kris Kobach is popularly elected in a very red state. So there's an incentive there for Kris Kobach to be a bomb thrower rather than a calm, impartial administrator of elections. And people might be saying, gosh, Secretary of State's an elected position in other states? That's true in two-thirds of the states in the union, that they're popularly elected.
Well, judges are elected in other states, too, which a lot of people in New Hampshire find shocking.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing, right? You wouldn't think a lot of people would say judges shouldn't be elected either. And because you want that Secretary of State in charge of elections, you would think, well, that's a nonpartisan position. And Bill Gardner has always worked hard to cultivate that. But other secretaries of state are different. And again, that gets back to Bill Gardner's dilemma being on this commission, is that we can take Bill Gardner's intentions at face value, that he wants to have a discussion of this and let all the facts be out on the table and then let people make up their minds. And that's a noble goal. I'm not convinced that the vice chair of this election commission has that goal. And that essay that he wrote for Breitbart and all, I mean, the vice chair of an National Election Commission writes for an alt-right publication and makes an unsubstantiated claim of voter fraud in another state where he's going. That's the guy in charge. See, that's my dilemma, is that if someone's going to poison the well like that, then what good is this commission going to do despite Secretary of State Gardner's best efforts?
Casey?
Just one other note on the kind of politicization of or just how different states are different. And in this case, it's also worth noting that not only is Kris Kobach a popularly elected Secretary of State, but he is also pursuing a Republican nomination for governor in his home state right now, too. So, you know, one can, you know, maybe read into his attempts to kind of stir the pot in New Hampshire elections as an attempt to kind of maybe get more, support or drum people up as part of that political campaign as well.
Well, it's interesting. Lots of talk about secretaries of state, Kobach, Gardner. The last time I remember this much attention to this somewhat obscure office is during the Florida 2000 presidential election. Remember, the secretary of state in Florida was, you know, sort of a target of political opposition and debate and so forth over her role there. And then we had here in New Hampshire, and again, it was a big week for this issue. We had Jason Kander coming up to New Hampshire from Missouri. He's the former Missouri Secretary of State. Now he's president of something called Let America Vote. This is a nonprofit designed to fight what it calls voter suppression. And Dante, since you mentioned it, former Secretary of State Jason Kander also addressed the controversy over Bill Gardner's participation in this Election Integrity Commission. Let's hear.
Secretary Gardner is a professional. He's someone who's well-respected among the community of folks who administer elections. And I'm offended on his behalf at the things that have been said about elections here in New Hampshire. You've got a commission here that was formed really originally to justify the biggest lie that a sitting president has ever told, which is that there were millions of illegal votes in the election.
Again, that is former Secretary of State of Missouri, Jason Kander, talking about this. Dante, just politically, what do you think about some of these groups coming into New Hampshire? You know, Let America Vote. There have been other groups on all sides of this issue coming in and speaking to New Hampshire citizens, speaking to the legislature, holding rallies and so forth.
Well, I mean, certainly voting rights are on the front burner in state legislatures around the country. And so, you know, again, elections are governed by states in some ways a lot more than by the federal government, especially given the case that the Voting Rights Act, the Supreme Court has, stepped that back quite a bit in its decisions. So for partisans around the country, I mean, it's they see this, you know, Democrats see this commission as basically giving cover to Republican majorities in state legislatures to put things into place that will make voting more difficult. And they believe that if we make voting more difficult, who's it going to rule out? It's going to rule out people who would probably vote for Democrats. And that's the concern, and that's why it's gotten so much attention from these outside groups.
Well, speaking of some of these groups, with us now on the phone is Huck Montgomery. He's president of Granite Roots Public Solutions, a campaign and government relations consulting firm in Concord. He most recently headed up America Votes NH, its statehouse advocacy effort around SB3 and other voting bills. And Huck, good to have you. Thank you for your time.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, while many have said that there is not much voter fraud in New Hampshire, Republicans and Democrats, there are rules that some say could be tightened up. For example, people who vote here should live here and they should be able to prove it. What do you think about that, Huck?
Well, I think that's a key distinction, right? The debate here is often couched in terms of voter fraud. And yet what we're really talking about is two distinct issues. There's whether people are actually voting fraudulently. Are there people coming over in buses, as was discussed before, or is there simply a philosophical disagreement about who ought to be allowed to vote and what ought to qualify as domicile? Now, interestingly, as was mentioned before, by Dante, that issue really was settled in Senate Bill 3, which was a Republican-led bill, which was really designed to, as they said, tighten things up. And in that law, it explicitly codified that college students who live in dorms on campus are eligible to vote here. So I think that the philosophical issue largely was won by the advocates for, like our team, who want to see college students able to vote where they go to school. And I think that piece of that philosophical discussion really ought to be set aside. And let's focus on what Chris Kobach and others are talking about with regard to voter fraud, and he's not only unsubstantiated, but I think demonstrably false assertions about rampant voter fraud here in New Hampshire. So if we're going to talk about this debate, let's be clear about the terms. The philosophical discussion about whether college students should be able to vote is settled law in New Hampshire. Now let's discuss whether this sham voting commission of Chris Kobach's and Donald Trump's is doing good work or not, and I think it's clear that it isn't.
Well, here's an email that came in from Kevin in Conway, Huck, and I'd love to share this with you. Kevin says, "It puzzles me how in this country we hold certain things near and dear, but some folks just don't want to take responsibility to make sure things stay that way. Since the day I turned 16, I have not been without an ID. You can get to the voting booth. You can get to the DMV to obtain the proper ID. If you show up to vote without an ID, you shouldn't be allowed to vote, period." Kevin says, "Maybe we should lead the direction we want our state to go. to those who care enough to have the proper forms when we show up to vote. Kevin, thank you for the email. And I wonder how you feel about that, Huck.
I appreciate Kevin's perspective, but I think that his comments, frankly, demonstrate his privilege that he is able to achieve, you know, the kind of life that allows it to be easy for him to have an ID, to do these sorts of things, to sort of check the boxes that he thinks ought to be required. But so many people in our state and around the country aren't able to do that. Elderly people, again, who just happen to have circumstances that don't allow them to have an ID in New Hampshire. For instance, if I'm going to, you know, let's say I'm from Florida, I move up to New Hampshire to take care of my sick aunt. I'm going to live here for the duration. I can't vote in Florida because I don't live there. I live in New Hampshire, but maybe I've only been here for a couple of weeks before the election. I haven't been able to get an ID. So I think it's really, you know, not fair for us to assume that our personal circumstances are what everybody else's circumstances are. And there are thousands and thousands of people in New Hampshire who fall through the cracks of Senate Bill 3. Now, I do think that that does conjure up another important philosophical discussion that we should have about what is the role of the state in our elections? What is the role of our government, the Secretary of State's office and the AG's office? I think that many New Hampshire voters, many Granite Staters, myself included, think that that role ought to be to make sure that every eligible voter can vote. And there's good news on that front, especially when it comes to the ruling on Senate Bill 3, which, frankly, I think I have to push back a little bit on my good friend Barbara Griffin, who did, by the way, sidebar, amazing work on the on many other issues, including electronic poll books this year. But in this case, she really misrepresented what those penalties in Senate Bill 3 were. Those penalties were struck down by a judge this week. He termed them severe restrictions on the right to vote. This is a $5,000 penalty, not the usual penalty for committing voter fraud, meaning knowingly voting in two places or voting where you don't live. These are penalties. It's a $5,000 penalty in Senate Bill 3 for failing to return with paperwork. That's very different. And a judge in New Hampshire said that was a severe restriction on the right to vote and struck it down. So some of the key provisions of Senate Bill 3 that are bad, they're holding people's right to vote back, are going down.
Well, and Huck, let me jump in if I could, please. And I do apologize. There's a lot more that we could follow up on. And I think we're going to have to do a whole nother show on this pretty soon once some of this legal stuff around SB 3 is sorted out. So I'll let that sit there for the moment. But one last question for you, please, Huck. What do you expect to be working on in terms of this voting issue when the legislature comes back to town in January?
Well, I think what we hope to accomplish from the New Hampshire Campaign for Voting Rights and America Votes, and to be clear, I didn't run the group America Votes, just their advocacy efforts on this topic. I think we hope to see more work on modernization of our election systems. There was an electronic poll books pilot program, as I mentioned, that was passed this year, thanks to the really good work of Barbara Griffin and many others. There are ideas that can really help tighten things up, but simultaneously expand people's access. That includes automatic voter registration. And, you know, another idea is, rather than erecting hurdles at the registration point or at the polls, let's have really strong enforcement for voter fraud. So if people are going to actually break the law, because let's remember it is illegal to vote twice or to vote somewhere where you don't live, let's make sure we investigate that and prosecute those people. I bet a lot of people didn't know that there's only one attorney at the Attorney General's office who's responsible for voting issues, and he's also responsible for a dozen or more other state agencies. Luckily, just this past year in the state budget, the Attorney General's office was given an investigator for
right,
these issues.
Right, I remember
but
that.
We can do
sure.
more for resources, and I hope that that's the kind of thing we can do in the next legislative session.
All right, Huck, we'll talk to you again. Thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Thanks so much, Laura.
That's Huck Montgomery, president of Granite Roots Public Solutions. And Casey and Dante, wow, almost out of time, but I did have a couple more last questions for you. And Casey, what's next on this SB 3 case? Again, and remind us, even though we've talked about it, how this judge left it.
Right. So basically, the judge said, look, I'm not going to rule on the constitutionality of this law right now, but I am going to say you can't enforce the penalties associated with it because we don't know, you know, that as Huck said, they're severe and, you know, we should just put a pause on those for
now. A temporary ruling
exactly.
because of this special election.
So, so right now, as far as I know, a follow-up hearing, any additional kind of litigation steps on that have not yet been scheduled, but we will certainly keep people posted as they are.
Right. So the judge said there needs to be a full hearing before he makes a permanent finding.
Right.
So this ruling we've been talking about is just temporary. He did it just because there was a special election he wanted to clarify.
And there are more municipal elections coming in the coming weeks. So we have Manchester next week, a number of others coming throughout the fall. So I think that was also why they wanted to just get this kind of initially cleared up while these lawsuits were pending.
Right. So Dante, how about the commission? What do you think its role will be going forward?
I'm afraid its role is going to be a lot of smoke, and as opposed to making concrete reforms. I mean, if you go through the slides, if you weren't able to go to and see the whole thing, who would do that? But if you weren't able to do that and see the slide, there are some good ideas there. I mean, one is updating voter lists and making it easier for states to work together on the voter lists that they have to eliminate the duplications and so forth. And that's an idea that goes far before, you know, Donald Trump. You know, the Obama had a commission on election administration, said a similar thing. The second thing is that, you know, getting away from electronic voting and having a paper ballot record like we do in New Hampshire. So if you go to Manchester and vote, there are machines there, but you're filling out a paper ballot. And the emphasis in the commission was, at least with the presenters, was beware of voting machines that are electronic only, you know, and especially now because of all the concerns about hacking and so forth.
Sure.
If there was progress on those two things, that would actually be a concrete accomplishment. Now, if Secretary of State Kobach's more interested in writing Breitbart columns than election administration, then we're not going to get to that point, and I think Secretary of State Gardner is going to be disappointed.
Casey, last question for you. We talked about SB3. I asked Huck what's coming up in the legislature when they reconvene in January. Are there other voter laws that are out there that you're expecting, or are we mostly just going to see people waiting for SB3?
Well, the LSRs are being filed right now. I would expect to see some movement on absentee voting as well, given some of the other concerns that came up about how that process works earlier this year, and that can be a whole nother discussion. But as I mentioned, we will definitely continue to follow all of these developments closely.
Absolutely. And you can check out Casey's reporting if you miss it on air at nhpr.org. There's a ton there. Casey, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Casey McDermott, NHPR reporter covering politics and policy. Dante Scala, thank you very much as well.
You're welcome, Laura.
Dante Scala, Associate Professor of Political Science at UNH. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoi.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.